Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday, January 13th, 2012. Friday the 13th. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, it sounded better when you didn't rehearse it the first time.
Yeah, it kind of did. Cut. Yeah. All right, let me try that again.
Oh, no, I think it's good the way it is.
We'll let Steve decide. Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday the 13th, dun dun dun, 2011. January, Friday the 13th.
2011? What, we've gone back
in
time.
Did I say 11? You know what? I never changed my date on here.
Yeah, we've gone back in time.
I was smart enough to do it the first time, so let me do it again.
Take three.
Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday the 13th. January 13th, 2012. I'm Lisa, and our mouse chatters today are Chris, Lauren, and Bob. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
On today's show, we're going to have a little bit of news, and then we're going to do some listener questions. We have a lot of those to catch up on, and we always like to get back to you as quickly as we can. And there's some interesting ones, so let's get started. We're going to start with Chris's announcement. Chris, go ahead.
Discounted room rates are out now for annual pass holders starting March 9th through March 31st and beginning again May 25th through – why can't I do this? Never mind. Let's just not even have an announcement.
Chris, come on. Come on.
Okay.
Just,
I'm like tongue-tied.
Deep breath. Deep breath. Here we go.
I'm not having a baby.
Okay. All right. Done that.
Okay. Discounted room rates are out now for annual pass holders at Walt Disney World. If you check in between March 9th and June 14th, 2012, you can get between 25 and 40% off your Disney room. There are some blackout dates, mainly around Easter, but otherwise, it looks like there's a lot of availability. Not all resorts are available under this promotion.
Okay, that's a pretty good discount.
It is pretty good. The 35 to 40 is for villas, 30 to 35 on deluxe resorts, 25 to 30 on moderates, and 25 off values.
Good deal.
Still pretty good.
Yes.
Okay. Well, just the one announcement. Bob has some news. Do you want to update us on the Disney news happenings?
Yeah, a couple of major stories, but only just a couple. The first is, I guess, the biggest one. Disney did announce this week that they will be closing Test Track for a refurbishment beginning sometime in April, and it will reopen in the fall. So an extended refurbishment period. According to Disney's official statement, the new version of the attraction will transform the current testing workshop into the sleek Chevrolet Design Center at Epcot, where guests can become immersed in the fun and fast world of automotive design. Here, guests will become automotive designers and create their own custom vehicles. Next, they'll buckle into a six-person sim car ride vehicle and test out their design on the challenging track of the Test Track course. So basically, they've renewed their agreement with GM. The only difference here is it's now going to be all Chevrolet vehicles, which not a surprise there because they've already been kind of changing a lot of the vehicles and putting new Chevrolet overlays on a bunch of them. But it sounds like to me, I think you're probably going to get a new queue line. You're probably going to get a new pre-show, which is good because I think the last one was getting dated. And it almost sounds like you can, design like a simulated vehicle, almost like build your own Space Mountain at Disney Quest is the first thing that came to mind to me. You know, if you've done that where you do the simulation and then you actually ride it. So I think that's kind of neat. I think
this
was.
Yeah, but is that what you think they're going to turn the whole ride into? Because
well, I think it's going to be
unclear.
It is kind of unclear. I think the focus is going to be more on design and testing versus putting cars through their paces and submitting cars to various braking tests and things like it is now. I think it's totally going to change in that sense. I mean, I think the best part of that ride for a lot of people is going out on the track. So I think the update is going to take advantage of that. you know, it's I guess it's bad that it's going to be down for the entire summer. But, you know, like I wrote in a blog post, too, you know, if not now, when? I mean, there's never a good time to do a 5-month, you know, shutdown of a ride.
I just hope they don't take that part away from the ride.
No, no. I mean, it clearly says, you know, we'll test out their design. Riders will test out their design on the challenging track of the test track course. So that's still going to be there. As for what the rest of the ride is going to be like now, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, the whole thing with, you know, guests will become automotive designers and create their own custom vehicle before taking it out on the track. Well, how do you get 6 people to agree on what the design is? That to me is the unanswered question. But I you know, I don't know. The ride was looking dated. It's broken down a lot lately. The vehicles, I know the TVs inside the vehicles haven't worked. So I think it was probably time for an update. I just hate to think what this is going to do to the crowds over the summer in Epcot. You know, over in Future World.
Yeah,
it's going to be pretty bad, I think. Yeah. I think it's a major draw.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it means more people are going to be heading towards Mission Space and Soarin'.
Soarin' is going to be hurting.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to put out more fast passes for Soarin'. You know.
But would that help anything? I mean, it wouldn't seem like that would help. It would just make the fast pass line more unbearable than it is already.
I don't know. Like I said, with such a long remodel period, and fall could mean, you know, a lot of things. Fall could mean, you know, September, you know.
It just seems to me that they could have waited till a slower time of year, you know.
Yeah, I thought of that, but then, I mean, look how long they're saying it's going to be closed for. Mm-hmm. So if you wait, you know, if you wait till after summer, well, then you run into the busy holiday crowds.
Yeah.
You know, and if you start
there's
it
no
now,
good time.
Yeah, and if you start it now, then you block out the spring break crowds. So
it's
and,
a tough call when to do refurbishments.
Yeah, a big one like this. So it does sound like kind of an overhaul. I hope when it does reopen that all of that time down is worth it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just a pretty facelift. You know. So we'll wait and see. And then, of course, the other change you're going to see is that the showroom, when you get off the ride, is going to be all Chevrolet cars. So,
yeah, that goes to reason.
That makes
you
sense.
Know, and the other announcement this week was that Dumbo closed on the, I believe the last day that it was open was the 8th. So if you're heading towards Dumbo anytime soon or you've got a trip planned, Dumbo is closed until I believe the 17th of February, they are moving Dumbo from its current location in Fantasyland over to its new location in Fantasyland. It's going to be one of the dueling Dumbos or double Dumbos over at Storybook Circus. So it's going to reopen there in about a month and a half in its new location. So very exciting news, but still, again, another big draw in the Magic Kingdom for a lot of families. You know, if you're going this time of year, it's not going to be open. So that's probably going to disappoint, you know, a bunch of kids. But there are Aladdin's magic carpets. You can ride those.
You know it's just not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not even close.
You know what it's missing? You know what Dumbo has that Aladdin doesn't have? Dumbo has that great view. But it won't have that now. I guess, you know, it'll have a different view and it'll probably be, you know, pretty good. But, you know, right now you go up there and you can see the castle and you can see all of Fantasyland. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, I think when, you know, once they add the second Dumbo and, you know, with them working in opposite directions, I think that'll be really good. But, you know, progress takes time. And unfortunately, you know, someone's always going to be disappointed, you know, when they're refurbishing.
Right. What do you think when they when they start the double Dumbo, when you're saying they're going in different directions, do you think they'll run one while they load the other and then vice versa?
I don't, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. Or are they just going to constantly run them at the same time so you get the experience of people going the other way, you know, at the same time, you know,
kind
you're going
freaky.
One way and, well, it's kind of like the you know, the Dragon Challenge at Universal Islands of Adventure before, you know, they stopped running them at the same time. You know, it was kind of neat to have the two coasters running simultaneously. I realize that's different than a kiddie ride, but,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I mean, what you're suggesting makes the most sense, because then you would have constant loading and riding. You know, so I don't know. Any guesses as to what is going to go in the spot that now occupies Dumbo? Is that going to be the entrance to Fantasyland?
I think that's
probably
what it is. I think that's the most reasonable explanation. And I haven't heard any gossip saying anything otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, it's either that or a DVC booth.
Right? Oh, that's true. You can't go wrong with that.
Well, right. I mean, and you can't you can't walk 10 feet without running into one of those. So, you know, so yeah. But no, in all seriousness, I think that's probably what it's going to be is the entranceway into the new Fantasyland. So, very cool. So,
time will tell. That'll be interesting.
So, lots of changes coming.
I hope they do something fun with it.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
They will.
Yeah.
Wait, can I ask a question? Does anybody know when they enclosed the carousel?
It wasn't like that in October.
No. It wasn't like that when I was there in August either. But when I was there in December, I meant to ask you guys about that.
Mm. Yeah, like, it was weird.
Why did they do it?
I don't know. I guess they're painting. That's what I heard. So either
that
or it's
closed it.
Well, it could be one of those art projects, you know, where they cover everything up with fabric. Who is that guy? Christo. I know. I was making a bad joke.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I don't know. I need to get back to the Magic Kingdom.
These are the little things that bother me.
Hey, Bob, since I'm going to be there the 24th, are you guys going to come down that weekend so we could all ride the new Dumbo together?
Oh, that would be neat. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
I want pictures.
You'll get them.
With you in them?
No, I'm going to take them.
I figured as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But don't forget Donna's Little Miss Photographer.
I know. That's true. I don't even know that she'd let me touch her camera. So
she also enjoys the title Little Miss Photographer.
You know what? And that is a perfect little segue into our topic for tonight, which is listener questions and comments. So I'm just going to cut you guys off right there. Hopefully you're done with news.
Yep.
Okay. And this is from Frank. And he says, hey, I have been listening to all of your shows. I love it. It keeps me sane while I drive. Love the episode with the photography tips. It was such a great idea. I hope you do another one. Thank you for the show. We are annual pass holders and travel frequently to Florida from New York. Next time we stay in Disney, we will use Pixie Vacations. Keep it up. Frank in New York. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And if our podcast keeps you sane, Frank, I'd hate to know what your drive is like.
Exactly.
Wow.
Really? I mean, it must be brutal wherever you're coming from.
That's true.
But we appreciate that, and Donna certainly appreciated that. I know we did a little, you know.
I thought it was a good show.
Celebratory dance. It was.
And if you've got any other unique ideas like that, send them in. You never know if we're going to go with it or not. Yep. All right, the next one. This is, I guess we don't really have a response for that. We appreciate your comments, so keep listening. This next one comes from Michael in Chicago, and he writes, hello, Mouse Chat. Thank you so much for this week's podcast. It was really exciting to not only hear a response from my email, but to actually have an entire podcast based on my question. Sorry for the confusion on underrated or unknown. I should have made that more clear. But I would love to listen to a top five of unknown attractions or activities at WDW. Here are my top five underrated activities. So he sends in his list, and I like this. And there's a little bit of overlap in what we did last week. First one. Completely agree with Animal Kingdom, specifically Dinosaur. Chris, I think you and Bob both agreed on Animal Kingdom, right?
Yeah, we did.
I think so.
Yep.
Which is, that almost never happens. So.
Oh, no, come on.
People watching. Nothing is better at the end of the night than sitting on the curb on Main Street with some Edie's ice cream. Number three, the boat ferries. They're slow but relaxing, and you always get a seat. I don't know about always getting a seat.
Depends on what time of day it is.
Yeah.
You always get on, pretty much.
Yeah, you always get on. But I've stood plenty of times. I like this next one. Characters from Hercules. I never see them in the parks, and there are no attractions based off of that movie. And I just recently watched that with Amber, and it's a good movie. I love the music, and it's fun. It's very quirky. I like it.
Well, I think they wanted Danny DeVito to play one of the characters in the park since he's short. But, I guess he refused. And I don't know why, because it's not like he's working these days.
I mean, oh, wow.
He's cut on dig, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, is he? Oh, okay. So he is
let me send you a link, my little friend.
All right. So well, good for him then.
I do love him. I love him, love him, love him.
No, I think he's great. I kid. I like Danny DeVito, you know.
I hope he's not one of our fans.
Well, if he is, he's not anymore.
Yeah, Danny, just call in. Bob, you can give Bob a piece of your mind.
Chasing him away.
Well, he's not a fan of mine anymore. But
I heard he was a Duffy lover.
Yeah.
Yeah, he strikes me as a Duffy lover. Him and Rhea Perlman strike me as Duffy lovers.
I don't know. Yeah.
So
not so much. And then I agree with this last one of Michael's as well. He says the big fountain at Epcot, it's just incredible to watch.
I agree.
It is. I do love the water show. And the music, it's all invigorating.
Do you remember years ago when it used to be like set to music? And I mean, years ago, I came, this is going back to the 90s, but they actually would have somebody come out and like conduct it.
Kind of like the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
That. Yeah, so sort of. I mean, just a guy in I think he was wearing like a purple tuxedo, you know, like a conductor's outfit with tails and stuff. And he would just, you know, they'd have the music and the fountains would shoot off and he'd be waving his arms. And it was cool. It was, you know, cheesy, but it was neat to watch. You know, it's just a little entertainment in the afternoon, you know.
I like cheesy.
Yeah.
You know what? Cheesy makes Disney a happy place.
Good list.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do we want to try and put together just a couple things about top five of unknown attractions and activities, or save that for another show?
Oh, I think we'll have to save that.
Yeah, that's going to be a thinker. So we'll have to.
Besides, I need 5.5.
I know.
She needs 8.75.
So I don't think I can come up with that half one on a spur of the notice here.
Uh-oh. Okay. So, Michael, we'll get back to you on that one. Good question. I'm going to our next one. So that wasn't really a question either. That was a comment. Next one is from Sarah. She writes, "Hi, Mouse Chatters. I'd like to share my favorite queue line. My favorite is the new queue line for the new Star Tours. The new Star Tours ride is incredible, and what they have done with the queue line is fantastic. First, starting outside in the Ewok Village. If you're lucky, you can listen to the Jedi Training Academy. My last trip, I was entering the complex when one of the stormtroopers was getting ready to go on stage for training, and he was interacting with the guests in line. And if you're really lucky, you can get in line during the parade, though it's a sad one compared to Black Party Bash."
Well, agree there. Yeah.
"The two rooms of the queue are awesome, as well with the commercials for locations and the interactions between R2-D2 and CP3O. C-3PO. Did that come out right?
It did. Something the second
like
time.
Oh, I just went too fast. Yeah. The second room as the two droids scanning language and the window with the shadows walking back and forth. Always something to look at this queue."
See, and I think I said I'd like the Star Tours queue in my backyard when we were talking about that on one of our shows. I think I agree. That really is a great queue line. And I just wish the AT-AT would make the firing noises. It hasn't done that in a long time.
Hmm.
You know, but yeah, I mean, great attraction. And if you were a fan or if you're familiar with the old queue line, there's a lot of, you know, hidden jokes involved, like Captain Rex, the pilot from the first attraction, is in the queue line labeled defective. And he's just kind of thrown in an area with all these other defective robots. So cute little, you know, reference
there. I like the little
there.
Details.
Yeah, and if you look at the robot scanning the luggage, you know, if you look at the screen, you know, every once in a while you'll see something in there like a Mickey plush doll or Chip and Dale. Madame Leota's head.
I like that. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
it makes
very,
me smile.
Very clever.
I like
yeah.
it. Okay. The next one, let's see. This one goes on for a while. This is from Melissa. And this.
Oh, hi, Melissa.
Yeah. Do you want to read this one?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, Mouse Chatters. First, let me say I am a big fan. From listening to your podcast to research my trip to Disney in September 2011, I discovered Pixie Vacations. I enjoyed working with Lauren in the past.
Sorry.
Go me. And just booked another trip with her yesterday for December 2012. Yay. I was listening to the New Year's Eve podcast, and Chris raved about the Boneyard at Animal Kingdom. While I agree that it is pretty awesome, especially the dig area, I have an issue with the place as a whole. My son turned 3 years old the week we returned from our trip. We had taken him to the Boneyard during this trip, and he loved the playground. My issue is with the way it was set up with high walls. There were a lot of times when I could not see my son at all. He likes it when mommy catches him at the bottom of the slide, so that meant he went to the top alone. My husband was on the dinosaur ride, so I was doing parenting duty solo. It was a bit scary. I felt like there was a great opportunity for someone to snatch my child. No cast member checked that me and my child belonged together, going in or out of the Boneyard. My husband came later and joined us, so they let in a man by himself with no child and asked no questions. I'm not trying to be picky, and like I said, it is a great playground. It just made me very nervous. Of course, he is my only child, and I may be a little more protective than someone with two or more kids. I hear things like sterilizing bottles and taking photos wears off more and more with each additional child.
It does.
I bet giving my son more freedom falls under that as well. I have to say, I actually do agree with Melissa on that.
It's true. It's completely valid.
I totally agree.
I actually didn't let my girls in there for years because I let them in once and I couldn't find them.
Yeah. Like, and I that's scary.
That freaked me out.
And that's when you station yourself at the exit and you're like, okay, no one's getting out with my child.
Exactly.
You know, we actually had that happen on the last trip. And I meant to mention this when we were talking about it, but I just sort of didn't get a chance. And my husband had the twins and I was sort of, you know, kind of running around watching the older one, watching the twins, whatever. And we lost a twin, which, you know, happens all the time. I mean, they're four. And we were both really panicked. And Kevin's like, go stand by the gate, you know. And so I did. And you're right. There's nobody there. And it's mm-hmm. it's pretty scary. And especially if you have multiple children, it's like it's really physical in there. I wouldn't not go in there, but I would definitely have a plan. And I don't think I would have taken them. You know, like there's pretty much no place on property that I'm uncomfortable taking the three of them by myself, except maybe there. You know, yeah. you can't keep up with them.
I'm truly not a huge fan of it just for that reason. I just
I think it's fantastic.
If I can't see my kids, I have an issue with it. So, and my kids are 10 and I'm still that way. So I'm an overly neurotic mother, though.
But you know, it's weird. I mean, when you find theme parks that build attractions like that, and I mean, they're not alone. You can go up to Universal and they have that Curious George play area that, you know, is built that same way. I mean, you can get lost in the tunnels and things. I mean, you can lose a child. So I don't know why, you know, ride designers, you know, in building theme park attractions.
But
that
you
are
know
gonna...
what? There are people that let their kids go and they're fine with it and they're comfortable with it too.
Oh, there were clearly kids over in the dig area. There just were too many kids and not enough moms over there and dads that there were definitely kids there who weren't supervised. Absolutely. Because there were really like probably 20 or 30 kids digging. There were just a handful of parents when I was over there.
Yeah.
And I don't really, no judgment on that because to be quite honest, you know, those kids were like 8 or 9 and maybe they had another sibling and mom was keeping an eye on that one or something. But, you know, what they need, they really do, as was pointed out, they need to have some sort of person at the gate, maybe with wristbands. You know, this is your kid. Okay, you can leave with that kid.
Yeah.
But the problem with that would be that people would totally abuse it then.
Yeah, you're right. They'd use it as babysitting.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Yeah, Lauren's already right. got that one figured out.
Yep. Well, I would because really... I always have to see my kids.
Yeah. I'm pretty paranoid too. I mean, if they're out of my sight, I get really panicky. So,
well, And I lost Alyssa this year in Universal.
Oh, gosh.
I lost her for like 10 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Gone.
Especially, I hate to say it, especially at Universal, just because.
It's not a park I'm familiar with.
It's not a park I'm familiar with, and I hate to say it because I think it's a beautiful park and it's a nice park to go to. But, you know, there are parts of it that are just, I don't know. For me, when I was leaving that party that I went to, the Harry Potter party. It was a potty party.
It was a Harry Potty party.
Be quiet. It's late. When I was leaving the Harry Potter party and I was walking with
Melissa, you had no idea where this would go, did you?
When I was leaving there, it was like 11 o'clock at night, and we walked through, what is it called? City Walk. And I was like, whoa, this is shady. I don't want to go back here. So...
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know what? I probably would not have freaked out as much as I did if I lost her in Disney World. And I know that's kind of crazy to say, but I know Disney World and she knows Disney World.
Yeah.
So if we were in the Magic Kingdom and I lost her, I probably would have been a lot calmer about it because I would have been like, okay, she knows this park inside and out.
Well, you know? The solution then is to go to Universal more. There you go.
So, no, that's not the solution.
So, well,
they don't have Duffy at Universal.
The solution is don't lose your kid in Universal. That's the solution.
They don't have Duffy. That's right. That's exactly right. That's why she won't go back.
Yeah. I called my husband. I'm like, by the way, I lost our daughter. I found her.
Yeah, but I did find her.
And by the way, moral to that story, always set up a spot when you enter a park to meet your kids if you get separated for some reason.
The problem is, though, the parks are so huge. By the time they got over there, you know, I mean, like if you said, you know, everybody, if you get lost, come go to the hub and stand by, you know, such and such. Well, if you're in, you know, Tomorrowland, that's, you know, a 10-minute walk.
Yeah. It's not easy. I think a smart thing is definitely to make sure your child knows your cell phone number because everyone's going to have a cell phone with them.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of people will use a Sharpie marker and write it on their belly or, you know, on their upper arm or something that's covered, but they can reveal it if they need to. But make sure the child knows to, you know, if they haven't seen mom or dad for a couple minutes, to find a cast member or an employee if they're at Universal and say, can you call this number? And they can usually do something. They can always do something.
So,
Lauren, do you want to continue? I'm sorry.
Yes, there's a little bit more left.
Yeah, there's more to this.
I look forward to future podcasts all year long leading up to my trip and beyond. Thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge and expertise. It really is helpful. I feel like I'm a pro at planning a Disney vacation from everything I've learned from the podcast. I'll have to make sure to see the Electric Light Parade this time so I can weigh in on the heated debate. Bob, this is for you. Also, the Duffy issue. I thought Duffy was not attractive looking with the hidden Mickey shape on his face. But then we bought one on our trip. The bear itself, not photos or cartoon renditions of him, is actually really cute and he's super soft. I'm going to have to side with Lauren on the Duffy issue.
Of course.
Yay, yeah, Melissa.
All right. First of all, she's your client, so of course she's going to say that. But, okay, it's not my, you know, aside from the fact that he's got the mark of Mickey on his butt, okay?
That's just not, weird.
Yeah, it's the whole storyline does not make any sense. It's a marketing ploy. I mean, Disney.
You know what? The story does make sense, though.
Marketing ploy.
Yeah,
it is a marketing ploy. No, it doesn't make sense. If Mickey's bear came to life, why is he bigger than Mickey Mouse? What was he exposed to radiation?
I can see that happening. I can totally see that happening.
You know, I mean, yes, it's a cute bear, but it's a marketing ploy. It's another way for Disney to, well, we can't be Build-A-Bear, but why don't we make a bear? You know, we can say it was Mickey's bear that, you know, Minnie gave him while he was at sea on his Disney cruise line or wherever the heck Mickey goes, you know, leaving Minnie behind. Just sailing alone, you notice, you know.
Is there a subtext there you're trying to imply?
Well, I just think it's odd. They've been together for like 80 years and, you know, they live in separate houses, but I digress. But, you know, like, I mean, either put a ring on her finger or don't. Like, you know, maybe.
Oh, my.
How did we go here.
but the whole thing with, okay, so she gives him this bear, and now they can sell this little plush, cute little bear. And I admit he is kind of cute in plush form, even though he's got the mark of Mickey on his butt. Okay,
Steve,
but we
make
can
sure
sell,
you leave that in.
We can sell all of these. We can sell all of these clothes for the bear because you can't have a naked
bear.
Yeah,
the German outfit's very cute.
All right, so yeah, I mean, you've got like German outfits and you've
Halloween
got like,
outfit. That's
you can dress
nice.
Him like a race car driver because, you know, apparently he's Barbie, you know, because Barbie's a rocket scientist and you know, a teacher and, you know, a lifeguard and everything else. And apparently Duffy is too because he's got outfits for everything. I mean, he's Santa Claus, he's a cowboy, he's, you know, a German sausage salesman.
He's like the village people.
Yes, I mean, you're right. That's exactly, yeah. I mean, put a bunch of them together and they could all do YMCA. That's exactly it.
I'm looking for the leather outfit. I haven't seen that one yet.
They don't have a little biker outfit with a little hat?
Not
you know,
yet.
The little policeman outfit? No? I mean, so yeah, it's a marketing ploy and Disney, you know, it's this was the best you could come up with. This is the best that top colleges and universities are putting out, you know, for people that you know, have degrees in marketing. This is what you come up with.
I actually don't mind the story. I think the story is kind of cute and everything. The whole, it's a little sweet to me. It's a little cloyingly sweet, and I don't really care for that. But, you know, which is why I'm a huge Disney fan.
Because there's nothing.
I know. You know what I'm saying? The whole, I don't know. Duffy just looks a little precious. Plus, he accosted me, so I have issues with him.
Anyway, so yeah, I disagree, Melissa. But thank you for writing.
Melissa, don't listen to Bob.
I'm going to start giving Bob Valium before the show.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Maybe some NyQuil.
Benadryl.
Okay. We will move on. Okay. We've got Ryan. Ryan writes, "Hey, Mouse Chatters, it's Ryan again. I have a question and an answer in regards to the last podcast. To answer your question about the best queue line, in my opinion, the best one resides at Hollywood Studios. I think the Tower of Terror displays Disney at its best. In the Tower of Terror, the outside line sets its mood of uncertainty and fear. The outside of the hotel is very run down by design, and in the meantime, you hear an elevator group screaming every 30 seconds to a minute. Once inside, the anticipation mounts while you actually feel as though you are checking in at this abandoned hotel. I can't get enough of the video. To this day, I recite the entire dialogue under my breath while it's playing. To sum it up, the boiler room is really what turns boys to men in modern-day fear factor. The design, the sounds, and most of all, the cast members give the perfect setting to a great thrill ride. The actual ride is just icing on the cake." And then he goes into a question, but I do agree. It's fantastically themed.
Yeah.
He sounds like a diehard fan. Gosh,
yeah, he's got the details. He should be writing stories or something.
Well, it is really well themed. I mean, I don't go on it often enough or at all.
I love it.
I mean, I've been on it a few times, so I know what he's talking about. But
Chris likes it, right?
But he's spot
okay.
on with the boiler room being creepy, and it reminds me of Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, I mean the cobwebs everywhere.
Yeah,
and
the cast members that you know they really get it. Some of them are so good.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm kind of excited by that queue line too. I like it. But he goes on. Let me keep going. As for my question, you described briefly the Dark Side of Disney book in the podcast. Are there any other Disney books that you would recommend for Disney Park fans? Disney Parks fans. Preferably, I would be interested in any book that focuses more on the parks themselves and not planning. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Ryan.
I like the Imagineering guides. You know, they have like a little, for each park, they have like a guide that tells about, you know, just like little behind the scenes details. I like those a lot. And they're pretty inexpensive. They're like around $15.
It's nice that some of these are very reasonably priced.
One of my favorite books is Reality Land by David Koenig. And it's mainly about Epcot and how Epcot ended up not being what Walt Disney originally envisioned. But there's a lot of behind the scenes, talks a lot about how the whole Disney World came to being, how it was built and everything. That's a great book.
Yeah, and I personally haven't read it, but I mean, people often, you know, go for Project Future, the inside story behind the creation of Disney.
I've got it in my hand. It's by Chad Emerson. It's a really short book. I mean, he's actually a law professor, and it reads a lot like a law review article. That's been sort of has a more personal style, and it's sort of been stretched out. I mean, the print is actually pretty huge in the book. You can see where they kind of tried to stretch it into. It's like, what? It's under 200 pages. But it's pretty good, and it's all about the creation of Disney World. I think this is probably a little bit better than Reality Land in a way. Reality Land is more, it's got a little more gossip, whereas Project Future is sort of a bit more fact-based. He's a lawyer, so that's, you know, what you would expect.
Right. A lot of facts. Okay.
Yes.
I mean,
but yeah, I mean, I think it originally did start out as a law review article that he turned into a book. So,
I mean, there's a lot of books out there. I haven't had the opportunity to read them. And I wonder if George and Imagineerding would be more of a source for some of these. Because, like, there's another one, The Vault of Walt, you know, Inside Secrets and you know, things like, you know, what did Walt Disney think about religion? Why did the FBI keep a file on him?
You know, George is online. We could ask him real quick. We'll put him on the spot. This is great. Okay, so we have George now. We've got our expert online. So we're going to put you on the spot, George. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic.
Okay.
Right now.
We're doing a listener question show, and we have a question from Ryan. And Ryan wants to know, you discussed briefly the Dark Side of Disney book in the podcast. Are there any other Disney books that you would recommend for Disney Parks fans? Preferably, I would be interested in any books that focus more on the parks themselves and not planning. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
And how long did you want the podcast to be?
we'll give you 5 minutes.
Okay. Obviously, one of my specialties is books. I love talking about books and reading books. And I get that question a lot. What would be a good choice to give somebody who wants to learn more about the Disney theme parks? I'm assuming he's talking about the construction, the history, the layout, the hidden details.
I think so.
Behind it. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Okay. First off, probably the book everybody should own is Since the World Began by Jeff Curti, which is the first 25 years of Walt Disney World's history. Covers a little bit more than that. It's 1971 to 1996. Fantastic overview of the entire Walt Disney World Resort up until, obviously, 1996. No one else has written a history book that's officially sponsored or endorsed by the company itself. So that's a good reason to buy that as well. Also, let's see, there's a great book called Epcot Center by Richard Baird, which was put out in 1982, which is about 300 and something pages long, all about the construction of Epcot Center. That's fantastic. And boy, there are a million other books that we could talk about. Actually, I've got, if you visit my website, imagineerding.com, and you look for the word bibliography, I've put together a history of Walt Disney World books. And I was going to pull it up fairly quickly, or maybe not fairly quickly. Go ahead, Bob.
I think Chris mentioned Reality Land as one of her.
Reality Land, yeah, by David Koenig. He's a fantastic. He's written Mouse Tales and Reality Land, which is sort of like a behind the scenes look at how Walt Disney World was constructed. And he interviewed a lot of the key players from back in the day. Let me see. Look at this list fairly quickly.
What about Chad Emerson's book? Do you recommend that?
Yeah, Project Future is a book Chad Emerson wrote. That was the first book that he did for his I4 Press. And it looks at the land development and how they were able to purchase and buy all of the 27,000 acres in Walt Disney World. as well, and all the land deals and the lawyers that they had to deal with, because apparently lawyers aren't the best people to deal with.
Chris, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Nor do I.
Hey, what about the book You're In, George? Would you recommend that book?
Wow, that would be a great book to talk about. back in the beginning of 2011, Chad approached a bunch of Disney historians and bloggers and enthusiasts and said, would you guys want to write a history of the first 40 years of Walt Disney World, and gave us each different subjects to write about. And I wrote a fairly long and involved piece about Discovery Island, not the one at Animal Kingdom, but the one that existed at Walt Disney World from about 1973 until 1999. And it's a lot of words, but no, you know, I will be signing autographs later. It's also got Michael Crawford from Progress City USA and a bunch of other fantastic bloggers that talk about
history. And what's the name of that book?
It is called 4 Decades of Magic, Celebrating the First 40 Years of Disney World.
Okay.
It came out in 2011.
Right now on Amazon. Cool.
Yes, you should buy several copies of it, and I will be happy to autograph each one. There's another one that everybody should own if they can. It's called Walt Disney Imagineering, A Behind the Dreams Look at Making the Magic Real. Because it talks about all the little hidden details, what the Imagineers did to create the parks. There's even a whole section just on signage about how they created it, but there's nothing about the bathrooms. I'm really, really disappointed in that as well.
Well, you've got to write that yourself.
Exactly. There, the biography I've probably got about, or the bibliography, I've probably got about 35 or 40 different titles about Walt Disney World listed. And there's something for everybody on that site.
Wow, you are very knowledgeable. I am impressed, sir.
We made a good call here.
Yes.
Anyways, now is
literally.
Was that a lifeline or phone a friend? Or
that was a phone a friend.
Of course, it was phone a friend.
Okay. Yeah, I think we still have our two lifelines.
Thank goodness.
Yes, but when we go to the audience, it's going to be kind of difficult.
Yeah. Because who knows if they'll call in late. But, you know, there are books about individual attractions, like the Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean, the railroads. So people can get as specific as they want to or as broad as they want to, depending on what kind of information they want. But, you know, go to imagineerding.com and check out the website and the bibliography.
Plug.
Got to do something, so.
No, that's good. No, it's a good site. Okay, so we're going to keep George in...
We've kidnapped him.
Yes, for the rest of the podcast.
And unfortunately, I don't have my tonsils either.
Yeah, it's an odd coincidence.
Oh, did the aliens
have yours
as well?
No, the Duffys took them.
The Duffy.
Oh, bad.
I listen. I'm a fan of the podcast, so
oh,
what
good.
Can I say?
Thank you.
There you go.
Okay, so here's the next one. This is from Jeff in Pittsburgh. Hello again, Mouse Chatters. I wanted to get your opinion on something. On February 29th, the Magic Kingdom will be open for 24 hours from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. That would be the 29th to the 1st. I will be going with my parents. We plan on going at opening, then take a break around 2 o'clock to go back again at 6 o'clock. However, I will be by myself for the late night and early morning hours. So my question to you is, if you had that much time in the Magic Kingdom, what would you do with it? And thanks for the feedback, and keep up the good work. That's from Jeff. Thank you for your question. You know what, George? Why don't you go ahead and jump in with this one?
Oh, I didn't know the guests got to go first. So what they can do by themselves?
Yeah.
Basically,
what would you do? Yeah.
Everything.
I mean, there's nothing you wouldn't do, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
just because you're alone doesn't mean you're going to stay away from different things.
No, not at all. I was kind of perplexed, scratching my head about the question. I think I would just hit my favorite attractions as often and as much as I could. You know, Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean. In February, it might be kind of cold at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and Splash Mountain may not be a good choice.
If I was there at 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, you'd find me curled up in a ball. Asleep
next
somewhere.
To Duffy.
Next to
she'd be curled up in Duffy. You know, should slice him open like a tauntaun and Empire Strikes Back.
Bob's enjoying this.
And she'd just crawl inside his entrails to stay warm.
Oh, this is too graphic.
That's a great idea.
Wow.
Aren't you glad you signed on, George?
Sure. Wouldn't a better response be, where could you catch quick catnaps at 3 o'clock in the morning? Like
Hall of Presidents.
Hall of Presidents.
Hall of Presidents.
Carousel of Progress.
I love the Carousel of Progress, though. It's one of my favorite rides.
Yeah, but the Carousel of Progress, they make you get off. What would they allow you to stay on?
Hall of Presidents, for
sure. Yeah, they're not going to kick you
out. They would notice you were in there.
Yeah, they'd just be happy to have somebody in there.
You know what? We have another comment coming up that that refers to the Hall of Presidents. So you guys are going to bite your tongue.
Well, here's the thing. What I would do, early in the morning hours, I would love to take pictures of a nearly empty Main Street because I think maybe it won't be just because people will think this is special, but I'd like to think at 2, 3, 4 a.m., it's going to be pretty empty. And to just stand on Main Street and get lots of pictures of the castle, all lit up as it changes colors and cycles through its various colors. And then, sunrise as the sun comes up over Cinderella Castle. I mean, those are going to make for some excellent shots that, you just don't get any other time. Same thing with the Fantasyland expansion. I think if you can capture pictures of late hours and early, late morning, early morning, depending on how you look at it, and then sunrise over the new Fantasyland. You've got Beast Castle and the Little Mermaid ride and everything. I think that's going to look really, really nice.
That's very insightful of you, Bob. I'm surprised.
Occasionally I get one right.
We were actually, me, Bob, and George were all going to try to go to the 24-hour leap day thing, and it just didn't work out for us. But I think I would have loved it. And I know I wouldn't have had any energy at 3 in the morning, but it still would have been great.
You know what? Give it another 4 years, and maybe they'll do it again.
We were kind of saying that, actually. So
We can start planning now.
I'm going to be worse in 4 years. I'm going to be...
that's a valid point.
And by then, there may be a Mrs. Duffy or something like that, so everyone can snuggle up.
Don't give them any ideas, but okay.
Bob, did you cancel the scooter for Chris?
Yes.
Shut up.
The electric vehicle, the wheelchair we can put her in. So.
Shut up.
Okay. So we all kind of chimed in on that. Chris or Lauren, do you have anything else to add? Bob?
No.
Yeah, we kind of made that a group conversation.
You know what would have been fun, though, is just sitting there talking with people. Like when we all go as grown-ups, we sit around a lot and just chat. I think it would be great to be sitting there at 3 in the morning, just having a conversation. Of course, you'd be totally loopy, so you could probably, get
that
Bob
conversation
to say all kinds
could
of...
go anywhere.
It probably could, yes.
We have another one from Brandon, and Brandon writes, "Hello, Mouse Chatters. I'll get the obligatory kissing up out of the way first. Love the podcast, love the blog, everything Walt Disney World, and love Bob's photography. Now, on to the question." Well, thank you. What about my stuff? Just kidding. My wife and I are doing a Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise package this June, spending 2 days in the parks before the cruise. Bob's been great to work with, by the way. We love the Wishes fireworks, but don't love the crowds on Main Street. We've seen the show plenty of times there, so we are looking for a way to avoid the crowd while catching the show. I've thought of 3 options and wanted all of your opinions on which way we should go. Option 1, do the Wishes dessert party and catch the show from Tomorrowland Terrace. Option 2, book a reservation at the California Grill at the Contemporary and watch the show from up there. Option 3, go to the beach at the Polynesian and see the fireworks from there. And that has a sub-comment, and that says, we are relying on Disney transportation, so we need to go back to the park to get to our hotel, which is All-Star. Not sure when or if this will make it on the show, but if it's around the 16th of January... My wife, is it Sherry or Cherie?
No, it's Sherry.
Is it Sherry? Okay. My wife, Sherry, is turning 30, so if you could give her a birthday shout-out, I'd appreciate it. Our Disney cruise this summer is for her 30th birthday, our 10th wedding anniversary, our first honeymoon, and our first Disney trip without kids. Woohoo!
Wow.
Well, happy birthday, Sherry. And let's get to the question. Which place do you think would be a unique and different place to see the fireworks?
California Grill. I don't think the dessert party has that great of a view, and I know Bob will concur with me on that. But I would go with California Grill.
I would too, just because you want to try. Aren't they refurbishing that soon?
Yeah. No, end of the year. End of the year for California Grill. Yeah, I mean, I and he and I have talked about the California Grill. The one downside for me, and I mean, it is amazing views. I mean, even during, you know, early dinner hours, just to look out and be able to see, you know, Hollywood Studios and Epcot and the Magic Kingdom. I mean, you can see everything from up there. Is, you know, you're paying a lot of money, you know, for, you know, that one specific thing, basically, and they know it. I mean, so a dinner for two, if you're doing appetizers to dessert and a little alcohol, you know, can run you $180. So, I mean, I know they're celebrating a lot of stuff. I mean, a dinner, a birthday, or a birthday anniversary, honeymoon, first trip without kids. They're going to be just full of buttons. But that's still a lot of money to pay out. It is an incredible view. And it is very special. If you didn't want to spend, you know, that kind of money because you've
then
got
I'd
the trip.
Go to the Poly.
Yeah, I'd probably go to the Poly because you get a great view. They pipe in the music.
Yeah,
you
the
can
Poly
get a
gets my vote.
Drink. I kind of like that as another option.
Well, it's going to have the romantic aspect, and that's going to coincide with the 10th wedding anniversary. And they're not going to have kids, so I like option 3.
And you can time it to see the electrical water pageant,
which I love that.
I love that as well. So,
yeah, I'm very alone in my stance there.
Do you really enjoy that, Bob? I mean, George. Sorry.
Well, see, you're used to complaining to Bob.
Look at the accusatory tone.
I'm just surprised that George. Well, you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that George likes it because George likes everything kind of retro. And so, yeah, I can see why George likes that.
Like blue cheese. No, it's fun. I mean, it was the original inspiration for the Main Street Electrical Parade and
was
it's been
really?
Running. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. What else do I know?
No, so. I mean, a lot of people, it's funny because I don't think most people even know about it. And so, you know, you'll catch it from the monorail as it's heading back to the TTC at the end of the night. And you'll hear people, you know, you'll see people point and they'll go, what is that?
Yeah.
So because nobody knows, nobody's ever seen it, you know, or very few people are familiar with it. So
I'll be honest. I'm really surprised when someone says, oh, and then this night I'm going to go watch the electric water pageant. I'm like, really?
Aw.
Don't you have better things to do?
Well, not since Pleasure Island closed. You know?
Brandon, don't pay attention. Just go to the Polynesian, do your thing there, watch the show, and stick around for the water pageant.
Or go to California Grill and have a lot of food. Because I'm with the food option.
It is a close second for me.
Yeah. Plus, you can walk back to... Well, your transportation is... Yeah, your transportation is going to be pretty much equal from the Poly or the Contemporary.
And neither one's going to be bad.
No, but I think we can all agree that, I mean, the Wishes dessert party is nice in that, you know, it never runs out of food and you've got a guaranteed spot.
Oh, that's not true.
But the view is obstructed. It's not the best view for
it is.
Watching the show.
And you can get that same view on nights when they don't have the dessert party. You can just go up there and sit because we've done that during Wishes because we just, you know, I mean, frankly, I wanted to recharge my phone and there are plugs up there. And it's really a terrible view.
Yeah. So you're paying for the desserts.
Yeah, there are certainly better views.
Yeah.
I think you're better off if you're going to spend that kind of money on a dessert party. I think the Epcot dessert party Illuminations is going to be your better option.
Or create your own dessert party and go get a cupcake because really
that's all you need.
Yeah.
Okay. So Brandon, thank you. All right. We have one more listener question. This comes from Amy and she writes, you may have received this question before, but here it goes. I will be taking a Disney cruise this spring, booked with your wonderful and helpful Debbie, and we will be staying 2 nights at Pop for 2 days before the cruise, my husband is dying to go to Universal one of these days, but we won't be renting a car, so I don't know how we're going to get there. Is there any way besides a cab to get to Universal from Pop? Thanks in advance, Amy. All right, Chris, I know you're chomping at the bit here.
Okay, so the most common option that we see people do is they go ahead and they buy the one-day, two-park option from Universal. It allows you to get into both parks and that for that entire day, and they'll come pick you up. And it's about $139, and they pick you up at the resort and will drop you off at the front of the park, which is nice because actually the parking at Universal is pretty far from the front of the parks. And then you can go ahead and just, when you're ready to go, you just call them and they come and take you back to your resort.
If that's too expensive of an option, you just have to weigh that against, you know, what a cab would cost for your family and then buying tickets. I mean, if you're not going to be park hopping, you know, if you just want to do one park, and really it is kind of hard to do two parks in one day, then you may just be better off taking, you know, a cab or a shuttle and buying tickets separately.
Yeah,
right.
And
because if you've got a big group, it's like $45 extra just to park hop that day, you know, per person. If you've got five people, that's quite a lot of money.
It adds up fast. I definitely don't recommend doing the public buses. It's a cheaper option, but you're going to waste so much time.
And it's a public bus, and you really...
Enough said.
I lived in Orlando. You don't want to do that.
Do you think those buses are really that bad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel sorry for anybody that has to ride them. Yes.
The only thing I would say is that anytime you get in a cab in any kind of tourist area, just make sure you negotiate a price beforehand. I think in general, the cab drivers who drive around on Disney property are probably not overcharging by too much. But, you know, you do run a risk of getting into a cab and then having the price change a little bit once,
well,
you know.
What would you say is the typical cost? Isn't it like $40, $45?
On Disney property, I haven't taken a cab
to
Universal, but on
Universal,
Disney property,
yeah.
I'm not sure. Has anyone done it?
I haven't, but you're looking at Pop is, let's see, that would be exit like 65, 67 off of Interstate 4. And, you know, once they got on I-4, they just have to go to exit 74. So in terms of miles, it's not really all that far. I mean, it's almost immediately off the exit, you know, it's itself. So, I mean,
it's about a 15-minute drive.
I mean, so what is that, a 10, 12 miles total probably?
Yeah, but they're going to really charge you. I mean, if they charge you, what did they charge us to get from Hollywood Studios to the Contemporary that one night?
Like 20
bucks?
20 bucks, yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at $15 to $20 within Disney property.
Yeah. I would probably negotiate a price. I still think if you're only going to do one park like Islands of Adventure because you want to experience, you know, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, for example, you're better off, you know, doing a taxi or a shuttle and buying the tickets separately, you know, because if you're not going to use that park hopping option, then that's just money wasted. And like Chris said, you know, if you've got three people, four people, five people, well, that's a chunk of change you're putting out. So,
yeah, there are plenty of options, but I don't think there are plenty of good options. I think a taxi or the ticket option is your best way to go. But again, as Bob said, only if you do plan on park hopping. If you've got specific rides in each park that you want to do, park hopping is going to be a great option. But, you know, if you can narrow it down to one park, you're going to save a ton of money. That's going to wrap it up for this week's show. Thank you to PixieVacations.com for sponsoring this podcast. You can download our shows at mousechat.net and also from iTunes. You can send your comments and questions to comments@mousechat.net. Thanks to George for joining us last minute. I appreciate that. And please join us again here next week on Mouse Chat.